that's out, that, and colossally, that's Mansell. That is Nigel Mansell.
Start your engines and buckle up. It's the lights out. Let's go. F1 show.
Welcome to the Lights Out, Let's Go F1 show on Jax Radio. And as this Friday is St. Patrick's Day, I thought I'd start the show off with the fantastic Dropkick Murphys with their song Rose Tattoo. And that's also played for my friend in Portishead, Jimmy Allen. So here with me this week is Rich Mason. How you doing, Rich? All right?
To be sure. Yes,
there you go.
St. Patrick's Day on Friday. Looking forward to that. It'll be great. And a good tune to kick us off with. I'm well, my friend. I'm well. And shout out to Jimmy as well.
Yeah, shout out to Jimmy.
Fair play to him.
Yeah. There you go. Because he did one of those DNA tests a while ago, and he was always tells me extremely pleased that there's absolutely no English in him whatsoever, and he's pretty much all Irish.
Is that unlike you, who's not only very English but pretty much almost pure Bristolian
and Viking,
with a tiny bit of Viking? There's like a splinter of a Viking ore that chafed one of his ancestors about 400 years ago, and that's about as close as he's got.
There you go.
Danny Knight is Bristolian through and through, I'm afraid.
It's not Bristolian. It's Sturminster Newton and Dorset, actually.
I'm sorry,
and
Dorset. It's the
London
southwest
as well.
And it's the south and southwest, my friend.
St. Pancras in London. And St. Pancras in London, which is from my dad's side.
Yeah, St. Pancras, not St. Pancreas. That's a very different place. I'm really keen. I wouldn't mind doing this DNA thing, seeing where I'm from. Yeah, you may notice I've got a West Midlands kind of thing going on, which is where most of my family are from. But, you know.
Anyway, let's get back to the motorsport. So I am going to kick the show off by talking about IndyCar, Rich.
Good.
And I've been trying to get you into this for a while now, and you are slowly getting there, which is good.
I am.
When the F1 season started, that same weekend, you also had the IndyCar season starting with their first race in St. Petersburg. And I sent you the highlights reel, didn't I? And it was absolute carnage. It's a great fun.
Brilliant. Amazing. I mean, check it out. There's cars flying through the air on more than one occasion. There's some overtakes that are just, you know, ridiculous. And then there's some things that get pulled off, things that don't work. But then, you know, it's quite different. And then some things don't change when Romain Grosjean ends up in a tyre wall. Bless his cotton socks. But the excitement.
I will say that wasn't his fault, though. That was Scott McLaughlin's fault.
It was, but it was a ballsy manoeuvre. But it was a ballsy manoeuvre.
But
it's the excitement of, and I think this has been floated around for F1, is that they don't have any tyre warmers, do they, in IndyCar? So
that's right,
Grosjean is a lap. He's heated his tyres up after a lap, after the last tyre stop. Scott McLaughlin's come out on stone cold rubber, and the difference between stone cold rubber and a lap, tyres that have had a lap to heat up is night and day. So, you know, that gave him the sense to go for it and produce the balls in a minute.
And it makes it exciting.
It produces some good racing. And, you know, it's nice to see Marcus Ericsson take the win as well. So
you had Grosjean. He was actually flying all weekend. So he took pole. And he was leading most of the race as well. Then that happened with Scott McLaughlin, unfortunately, when they were battling for the lead after the second round of tyre stops, which then put McLaren's Pato O'Ward in the lead. So you thought McLaren were actually going to get some luck after they didn't get much luck in the F1 race in Bahrain.
Yeah, that's what I thought. He looked good for the win, Pato O'Ward, didn't he?
Yeah, and then on the last lap, he had some electrics or power unit issue, and that allowed Chip Ganassi's Marcus Ericsson to go through. So again, with the F1 connection. But he went through and won. It was amazing. But there was an awful crash on lap one as well.
That lap one incident, as I say, there was cars in the air, there was all sorts of carnage going on, but it was nobody was hurt, thankfully.
No, but there was a car thrown into the air. So you had Helio Castroneves, Rosenqvist, Pagano were all involved. And yeah, like one of them, there was a car side on and another car just slammed into it and kind of scooped it into the air.
Yeah.
That wasn't nice. And then you had another car in the air on lap 47 as well, which was carnage. Apparently there's a new surface at that track and they were blaming on some of the incidents and things. But yeah, it was quite... IndyCar isn't quite normally that much carnage.
Isn't it?
Still a lot of fun. I mean, it's still a lot of fun and proper overtakes, you know, not sort of DRS overtakes that you necessarily get in F1. Proper overtakes, properly good racing, you know, getting out of shape at the corners and stuff. And they've it is very exciting.
They've got refueling as well. And these are 100, I mean, the St. Petersburg race was 100 laps. It's a fairly short lap, but it's still, you know, it's still a longer lap than, say, the Hungaro Ring in Austria, which is one of the shortest F1 laps that we do.
The Red Bull Ring, you mean?
The Red Bull Ring, or not the Hungaro Ring. Sorry, the Red Bull Ring, the Austrian, not the Hungaro Ring, which is obviously in Hungary, Richard.
I meant
the Red Bull Ring. I just can't bear to say anything with Red Bull in it. That's the problem. But yeah, so, it, you know, at 100 laps, you know, we're talking distances greater than F1 races. And to have the refueling in means that, you know, there's none of this sort of like, you know, fuel saving and all that sort of stuff that goes on and nursing the car a bit. They're kind of a bit more, you know, straight out and flat out racing. I really thoroughly enjoyed it. I really did.
I'm going to stick
with it this year, and I'm going to watch a few more races in their entirety.
Well, on Sky, they do show the full race. So I always watch now, the last two seasons now, I've watched each race in its entirety. So unlike F1, I don't necessarily watch all the practice, you know, and all qualifying, because I have a couple of qualifying sessions and stuff, but I do watch definitely, you know, each race in full. And it is, they are good fun. They are good fun. Even I found a love for the ovals as well. And there's a lot going on some of the oval tracks as well.
And
so
I think
as the season goes on,
you've said, Dan, there's a few things in IndyCar that, you know, could possibly transfer to F1 quite successfully and could, you know, spice things up a little bit. I think the no tyre warmers is almost a no-brainer. I think it adds another element of jeopardy to it. I quite like that.
Definitely.
And it's environmentally friendly. You're not plugging in these... I mean, how many electric blankets have they got for these tyres in each of the teams?
There you go. Exactly.
That's a lot of juice that's being used. So
Yes, it is. And very good link. So looking at finances, have you seen the smaller... pass pit wall that only got three people on. I can't remember if I mentioned it last week.
Yes.
Haas got a very small little pit wall. It saved them £200,000 or $200,000 over the season.
It has. There's only three of them can get on it, and it's tiny, isn't it, really?
But if that's all they need, then why not? You know, and you can, it's under a cost cap era. I think other teams are going to be looking at places where they can save money
Thing is, who needs a pit? I mean, this point has been made that Red Bull seem to have a great big long pit wall thing, but they're not actually. Does it need to be next to the pit wall?
Exactly.
Because they're on screens. I mean, I know Mercedes don't have that. They're in the back of the garage, Mercedes. They have people out there, but, you know, so I don't really, you know, it seems to be a bit more for the sort of cameras and dare I say it, the Drive to Survive, you know, stuff that out there and what have you. And they probably historically like being in the pit lane, but Haas have gone, well, hang on, we probably do need a couple of people out there, but let's just have a tiny little shed, basically, they've got, haven't they?
Yeah.
Haas written on it.
That's
Gunther Steiner's shed.
And more about finances. So this is how, you know, car companies like Ferrari, like Mercedes, like Aston Martin, and why they're involved in F1. So Aston Martin apparently had a reported $20 million added to their corporate value following their performance in Bahrain. Amazing, isn't it?
That's not bad return, is it, really?
Return, is it? That's pretty good.
That's just for one race. Obviously, the investment it's taken to get to that position is probably an extremely poor return, if we're honest. But what I'm trying to say is $20 million for one decent race result it just shows you the impact of the old adage of, you know, win on a Sunday, sell a car on a Monday kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely. But there you go. Right, okay, let's go to one of your songs, Rich, and then we can just inanely talk about motorsport.
It's not going to be inane. It won't be inane. It'll be better than inane. Stick with us. Right. So the last tune I had was Emerson Lake and Palmer, which is Carnival 9. And obviously Greg Lake features in there. And another feature of a lake is that it has a waterline. And some years ago, Dire Straits took us down to the waterline.
Welcome back to the Lightsack Let's Go F1 show on Jack's Radio, and you were just listening to Dire Straits with Down to the Waterline. Okay, so Rich, I am going to talk to you about my favourite driver, Mr. Fernando Alonso. So obviously we had a bit of a love-in last week about Alonso.
It's not just us, Dan. I think the whole of F1's got a bit of rekindled love for Fernando, haven't we?
And here's my theory on, I think, why he's so exciting to watch. Okay, so I'm going to take you back to Brazil 2021 when Lewis put in a fantastic display. Okay, when he came from the back of the grid to win that race.
Yeah.
Okay. Now it was a fantastic display, but his overtakes don't really fill you with that much excitement because a lot of them are DRS assisted. That's no slight on Lewis Hamilton. That's just F1 as it is.
Yeah.
But when you were watching Fernando, his overtakes were in corners like that corner third, like that turn 13, I think it is, the really difficult one in Bahrain. He seems to race an old school style of racing that is exciting because you're making the overtake. You know, you're getting it done in the corner, which is what F1 was always about.
Yeah.
I think drivers now, because you've got DRS, they rely on DRS to get that move done. And what Alonso was doing was all that old school stuff, which is incredibly more exciting. Now, so my question really here now is if the cars can follow closer, and Alonso's kind of proved that you can get those old school moves done, is there a case to get rid of DRS? Or if not get rid of it, reduce it, i.e. you have a sensor on the car that you have DRS, but as soon as it brings you alongside, then your DRS shuts off. I don't know how safe that would be or how it can be done, but I don't like the full DRS allowing you to overtake a car on the straight. Do you know what I mean? The idea of DRS was always to bring you alongside, so you then rely on the driver's skill to get the overtake done in the corner.
Well, the skill is in the approach. That's the thing. The skill is in the approach and slipstreaming the car, because that's what it always used to be. It's, you know, you've got this all this aero package on an F1 car. And even in the late 80s and early 90s, you know, they've got aero on there. They are creating a bit of dirty air. But the key was to get close and to get really close.
Slipstream
and then pull out and commit to the overtake. And you'd have to use, you know, the corner to do that and different approaches, as Alonso showed us in turn 10, I think it was actually at Bahrain. I don't know. I think he made a very good case. It was exciting. It was a lot more exciting. I mean, overtaking
a lot
the
more
corner,
exciting to watch, isn't it? Rather than just seeing somebody drift by on a straight.
Yeah, yeah, completely. It's more exciting to watch as long as it's done well. I'm looking at you, Mr. Verstappen, in 2021. Racing and overtaking in the corner is, you've got to do it well. And Fernando's shown us it absolutely can do. Yeah, it can be done. The other thing I like about Fernando,
and that's why Ricardo was always excited.
Yeah, Ricardo,
to watch, because
absolutely.
He was last of the late breakers
thing.
And, you know, whatever else.
Absolutely.
Same thing. The move was done in the corner.
And the thing is, you've got to take, in order to do that, and this is one of the things, so I'm going to come on something that has niggled me a little bit. They always seem to be in some sort of preservation mode, particularly around the tyres. And they are more, you know, Lewis does take a season long view, as he should, because they've only got three engines, and they've only got so many parts for the season. So you have to take that view. But what it seems to do to me is slightly nullify areas where otherwise you would attack. And what I loved about Fernando is he simply didn't care about being mechanically sympathetic to that Aston and was just like, I am going to race balls out, and I'm to hell with fuel saving. Give me 11, turn it up to 11, and let me get through the pack and get me through the overtakes and what have you. That's what he needed to do. So, you know, I mean, I think that's where we need to be. It needs to be racers kind of racing, you know, as close to the edge as they can for a good majority of the race.
Yeah, definitely.
And all of F1 these days is about preserving the tires and preserving fuel loads and strategizing of when you're going to attack. As you said, Lewis did what he did in Brazil beautifully well, absolutely used the strategy and the rules to his advantage. Was it the most exciting thing? Well, no, because after a few laps, we kind of went, oh, right, yeah, no, he's pulled up here, so that means on this straight now.
Yeah, that's exactly finish. It.
That's where he's going to go, and he dutifully went past people on the start-finish straight up to the first corner at
in Tamar. There was the one every really good time. Move on Lando Norris in that race.
Yeah, that was good.
Which was exciting, which is very good. But a lot of them were DRS, you know, and it shows that a DRS overtake isn't as exciting to watch because you kind of know it's going to happen. Whereas an overtake in the corner, you're not quite sure who's going to come out of that corner ahead or true. If they're going to come out at all. Do you know what I mean?
I think we also have to say that this is kind of how Fernando has always driven. And he is an 100%. Exciting, exciting driver. And you know, I'm coming around to your way of thinking a bit, Dan, you know.
Beautiful.
I really am.
It's beautiful.
It's taken getting him into a decent car. It seems like after all this time, he's finally made the right move from Alpine to Aston Martin for once. He's done the right thing. But yeah, I don't know. I agree. I think, you know, DRS does need to be looked at. If the whole reason for moving to these 22, 23 spec cars was to, you know, be able to slipstream and be able to get race closer, then surely we now need to look at, well, do we need DRS anymore?
Exactly, yeah, or at least reduce it so it, you know, it brings them alongside but doesn't just allow them to overtake on the straight or whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, absolutely. Okay, so before we go to another song, let's quickly talk Ferrari. So there is trouble brewing at Ferrari already, and we're only a race in. So the Italian press seem to really be on Frederick Vassal's back already, saying that he isn't wielding enough influence over the team. There's a few people high up in Ferrari F1 team who are going out the door soon. I don't have their names here, but there's a couple who are leaving already. It just seems that they've had they are having their implosion even earlier this year. The classic season Ferrari implosion.
Well, who's leaving?
Exactly.
Are we talking high up positions within the F1 team or within Ferrari?
not within Ferrari, right. Within the F1 team, yeah.
So are these people leaving voluntarily, or has Fred found some weak links and decided to move people on?
I don't think it's Fred's idea. I think it's higher up than that. I think it is Benedetta Vigna, who is the Ferrari CEO, who's got rid of a couple of people.
Mm. And you would hope that he would have some insight into that. It always seems to me that Ferrari are always meddling too much in the F1 team, and they need to leave people to get on with it. I said that about Binotto. And do you know what? I thought, to be fair, they left him alone. He didn't win the championship for them, so he's gone, which is only right and fair, but at least, you know, give the guy a good crack of the whip, which I felt, you know, Binotto had a good crack of the whip. He had a great car. They still have. I mean, I saw some GPS speed data, and for the majority of the lap at Bahrain, Ferrari was still the quickest. They're the quickest car on the straights. They just have to sort out exit speed from corners and apex speeds. If they do that, they do have the quickest car, bizarrely. Fred needs to be given some time to at least, you know, get the seat warm in the chair, for crying out loud. He's only been there 5 minutes and had one race, which wasn't an utter disaster. Yes, there was a mechanical failure, but, you know, that's something that any team can suffer. Hopefully they'll fix that. And Sainz did a reasonably good job, you know. It's the first race out.
As you were talking, I was just having a quick look. So apparently technical leader David Sanchez has already left, and he's been approached by McLaren. And there's rumours that there are more engineers to follow out the door at Ferrari. There you go.
So that's, you know,
names.
I don't know. Perhaps that's the way they do it. Perhaps actually the Ferrari CEO gets rid of these people, but actually there's been a conversation with Fred, and Fred has gone, no, these are the people we need to get rid of. Which and the CEO would do it, because then Fred can turn to the rest of the team and say, well, it's not me that's done it. You know. Being cynical.
Maybe. However, I don't see a long reign for Frederick Vasseur if higher up decisions are being made, because that's basically what happened with him at Renault, and he walked after a season.
Yeah, well,
he wasn't happy with it.
Yeah, but you know what you're taking on if you're going to go and manage Ferrari F1 team. You know that there's going to be, you know, fiddling and meddling from the board. So, I'm willing to give Fred a jolly good crack at the whip, and I hope Ferrari are too, because if not Fred, then who?
Well, that's exactly it.
Who?
But
are you going to drag Jean Todt out of retirement? Oh, and his slightly conflicted position in F1 anyway. No, it's just not going to happen. You know, they really have got to back somebody.
It's interesting that the Italian press is already on his back, and they wield a lot of power in Italy as well, really, when it comes to Ferrari F1 team. So there was a story this week in Corriere della Sera newspaper, which said that Vasseur was warned by Ferrari CEO Benedetto Vigna about his friendship with Toto Wolff and his discussion and his decision to fly to Bahrain with Toto. So it's a sort of a non-story, but it shows that these stories were, you know, the Italian press were already digging for these stories about Vasseur.
It is a non-story because the F1 paddock's tight. They all share flights together. There's, you know,
it's not the story I'm pointing out. It's the they're already on his back.
I know they're already on his back. And there is nothing there, and there is nothing in that. You know, it just seems to be that, you know, I don't quite know why they if they can't see that this leads to implosion anyway. You know, the Italian press need to just back off. I'm a CEO of Ferrari. I'd just sit them down and say, look, you can write whatever stories you like, but you need to back off, man.
It's not going to happen, is it?
I know it's not going to happen, but it needs to, because you just end up in this cycle that they've been in before. You know,
there will be. I predicted a Ferrari implosion last year. I am going to predict another Ferrari implosion.
Continuing implosion. Season. Nice. Like a neutron star. It's going to implode for many, many years to come. Excellent.
That's it. You're a Ferrari fan.
It's not looking good, according to Dan. There we go.
There you go. Right. Okay. We're going to go to another song. I know Adam's not with us. He's too busy with work at the moment. But we're going to go to one of his songs. This is a band called Mama with a song called Bang Bang. And this is Adam's attempt at being down with the kids, because this is literally been released in the last couple of weeks, I believe.
Brilliant.
So, yeah, this is quite a new song and it's a banger. So let's go. Perfect. That was Mama with Bang Bang on the Lightsight Let's Go F1 show on Jack's Radio. And we are just ripping about F1 today, because obviously there's no race this weekend. So, Rich.
Yeah, but we're into it, though. And that was a good banging tune, Adam. Thank you for that. Bringing us bang up to date.
Yes, it is. So
don't worry, I'll drag us back down to the 70s later on. Don't worry about that.
You gave me a teaser of a sentence to say to you to remind you, and that was "O little town of Bethlehem," and I have no idea what you're on about. So tell me.
Because I've got a feeling we're going to hear it quite a lot this year. This is actually something my wife noted, and I think she's right. And we tried to do a bit of research on it, but the Dutch national anthem, which we're going to hear a lot of this year, I feel,
right,
does sound a little bit like "O Little Town of Bethlehem," the Christmas carol. And I want people to go away.
Listen out next time.
Have a little thing. Have a little listen. Next time he's on top of the podium, which will probably be, you know, in Saudi next weekend. Have a little listen. I'm with her on this one. I have to be. I'm contractually obliged to be where her opinion is concerned. I think she's got something there. I think it's definitely, you know, there's definitely strains of "O Little Town of Bethlehem" in the Dutch national anthem. Have a listen.
Give us
a tweet and see what you think.
Right.
See if you think we're mad or not. Or rather, if you think my wife's mad or not. There we go.
Right. Okay, Rich. Something Karun Chandok has said, and he's calling for a rule change in F1, and I think we're both going to completely agree on this. So he has said he thinks F1 should do away with the hybrid engines, with the heavy batteries that make the cars look heavy on track, not very agile, etc. And he thinks we should go back to screaming V10s, but using 100% sustainable fuel.
Totally agree. And I'll tell you why I totally agree as well. A, the spectacle side of things. I think we've both moaned about how big the cars have got. They're over five and a bit, 5.5 meters long there.
A smaller, lighter car looks faster on TV as well.
Absolutely. It also wouldn't look ridiculous going around Monaco, so you could keep that jewel in the crown event, even though you hate it, Dan. But you know, it enables the racing to be more enjoyable, and the sound. You know, missing that V10 screaming era would be brilliant to go back to that. Aside from all of that, think about how heavy all those, because how heavy is a battery pack in an F1 car? I mean, they're a good 150.
They are heavy. Yeah,
they're 152. Yeah. You know, they're a good, you know, over 100 kilos of batteries and everything else. And also, you've got to think about where all the materials come from to make the batteries and all the rest of it. And I get that the technology, from an emissions perspective, in towns and cities like where I live. You know, if I was to drive into Bristol and I had a hybrid, my hybrid would make perfect sense. I could tootle into Bristol in complete electric mode and, you know, not expunge fumes out the back. But the bottom line is, you still got fumes out the back of an F1 car.
Yeah.
Why don't we look at getting rid of all the battery side of things, because it's heavy, adds weight. You've got to cart the things around and you've got to make them as well. But to move to 100% sustainable fuels, I think, is where it should be at.
Yeah, and he makes a good point where Le Mans, you know, are progressing hybrid technology anyway. So you get that, you know, from Le Mans type cars. Formula E are progressing, you know, all the electric side of stuff. So why can't F1 become the leading lights in the way of sustainable fuel? Which I think is kind of the future for road cars anyway.
I think it's definitely, it has to be. It's got to be the future for heavy goods vehicles and everything like that anyway, I think. I've said for a while, I think battery electric vehicles are possibly a wee bit Betamax.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think.
But... right, so we're going to go to another song in a bit, but just quickly, something that I saw.
That's your depressed sighing noise, is.
Well, it is. So in Bahrain, Red Bull were a long way, you know, out in front. They, you know, Max finished about 40 seconds ahead of the rest of the teams, apart from Perez, obviously. But what was worrying about that was nowhere near as fast as they could go. Because I've seen radio messages of them asking Max repeatedly to slow down, to hit certain sort of times and things. And he just had a hell of a lot more in there.
Yeah, he did.
And also what annoyed me was he said, I'll only slow down if both of us slow down, i.e. Perez as well. Another was saying, we're not going to race. Like, this is my victory. And Red Bull came on to the radio saying, there is no race, just slow down. And I think that's the problem when we have the Red Bull. When we have a Red Bull era is their drivers don't race, do they?
No, they don't. They absolutely don't. And Webber displayed that when he was with Vettel. Vettel was the number one driver. Yeah. Webber correctly made an utter nuisance of himself, you know, and did race and caused the accidents and all the rest of it. And they don't. And I appreciate that Red Bull fans will come back and said, oh, you know, we had, you know, 7 years of Mercedes dominance and everything else. And I get it. And I get that it was, you know, that it was a Mercedes car always winning and they seemed to have a second they could pull on the field. But the crucial point was, certainly for the first half of the year, they let the guys race, and that resulted in Nico Rosberg winning in 2016 and Valtteri Bottas doing a few things early in the season, and it rattled Lewis as well, and it was great for the spectacle of the sport.
Yeah, so 100%.
Red Bull 100%. Are not thinking of the fans.
No, they're not. Right, okay, let's go to another song, and Rich, this is one of yours.
Yes, so we had Dire Straits and Down to the Waterline, and Dire Straits had obviously a massive, massive hit with the Money for Nothing, which I'm sure everybody knows, but what you might not know is that backing vocals, and there's certainly the bit at the start, on Money for Nothing was sung by Sting, who came and worked with Dire Straits. So that moves us nicely to Sting and the Police, and this is their seminal hit, Roxanne.
You're listening to the Lightside Let's Go F1 show on Jax Radio, and you just heard the Police with Roxanne. So, Rich, let's talk Mercedes. So we haven't given them much of an outing this week. So there's been comments from Lewis in the press.
I think the no blame culture perhaps has gone out the window now. Now that we're into the second year of failure, perhaps. And Lewis was saying that I know what is needed in a car, and Mercedes didn't listen to me. You had Toto coming out making comments around that the current concept of their car doesn't have legs and they need to change things. Yeah, it's interesting. Things have fallen apart a little bit in Mercedes currently.
They have a little bit. I there's a bit of me going. I saw the comments he made at the end of the race last week even, saying that, you know, it was the worst weekend in F1, and I'm thinking, I don't think so. And you don't suddenly just in front of the press say, yes, we're going to go radical and we're going to change the car and we need to do something and this is all terrible. And I've only just thought and discovered that this is awful. And I'm now telling you that we are now going to change everything. And I'm about to go back to the factory and tell them all, right, I've had a decision about it. I don't think it happened like that. I think they have been realizing that they will have to change direction. Whether there's a B-spec car waiting in the wings, I don't know, but I don't think they have done this. I don't think it's as knee-jerk as the comments have made it out to be. I think there's an element of wanting to play to little bit and the whole sensationalism of it. I do think they have tried to develop the concept that they've got and realised, yeah, this isn't really going to go very far. So, and there's some people wanting, saying, as you have it, it is a complete nightmare. There's other people at the other end who are suggesting, well, actually, they just weren't ready. The actual proper 2023 car is going to turn up either in Australia at round three or Baku at round four, and then all of a sudden it'll hit the front end. But
now, what's interesting that I've heard a story as well about this is either that, you know, they have a B-spec car or whatever, but they are only looking to develop one car this year because of the cost cap. They're going to develop one car to get it to a point. So, it, in effect, they've got two different spec cars, essentially, to like get it to a point where they know that it's then fast, then they can bolt all those goodies onto the second car. It'd be interesting which driver goes down that route. But
it will be. I mean, it's a difficult one because I think they've believed in the computer models that said this zero side pod, this thing that they've gone for had pace in it. But the reality is that when you get out on the track, it simply doesn't have the pace of an Adrian Newey designed car.
And yeah,
if you look
at it.
And
that's it. Sorry,
Newey, well, I was going to say Newey's one of, you know, what have you got? You've got Rory Byrne, Adrian Newey, Gordon Murray. There's not that many in F1 history who have been aerodynamic, you know, savants. And probably Newey's probably the best. And I think, you know, you can have all of the things correct on the computer, and the computer will sit there and go, well, no, it should be doing this. But the reality is when you add air, you know, different air pressures, different weather, different track surfaces, everything else into the mix, it just doesn't work. And they've got to roll with it a little bit more, I think.
I mean, I think what's possibly caught them out this year is the step that Red Bull and Aston Martin have made. Because if you actually look at the Mercedes car, so in Bahrain this year, they lapped 0.7 seconds a lap faster than their car last year. That is despite a rule change of raising it up slightly that everyone had to do, which reportedly put a 0.5 second gain on it. So actually, they've made over a second gain in their car. So their car's in a good place.
Yeah.
The issue is Red Bull and Aston Martin have found a way of having even more gains.
Yeah.
And perhaps exactly. The concept that they have allows that to happen. But exactly. I think that's where they've been caught out.
I texted you guys after what he said on that Sunday and just said side pods incoming. Whatever philosophy that Red Bull and clearly Aston Martin, because Dan Fallow's moving to Aston Martin, have, you know, it's a very similar car. You know, Mercedes have got to look at that and just got to go, do you know what? That's what we've got to do. We've got to do something similar. So, you know, I'm sure they'll have as much information as they can about how the Red Bull car is designed. And, you know, I think you'll see something coming out with some side pods on it pretty soon.
Yeah, possibly. It's going to be very interesting to see. And there was also a story saying Lewis could go to Ferrari. I mean,
This story, seriously, if he goes to Ferrari in the next you know, I mean, when would he go to Ferrari? There's just no way. No, I cannot believe it. If that happens, I'll eat my trousers. I really will. I don't think it will. I could have bought it once he won his eighth title. I think we spoke about it previously on the show to say, you know, he'd finish his career out by doing the Ferrari gig. But right now, he wants that eighth title. And you know, I don't think it'll happen.
Okay, so you've heard it here. If Lewis goes to Ferrari, Rich Mason's going to eat his trousers, and we can do a live show when he does. Right, okay, we're going to go to a song. This is one of mine this time, and we are going to go with We Didn't Start the Fire by Billy Joel. That was Billy Joel with We Didn't Start the Fire. And this is the Lights Out Let's Go F1 show on Jack's Radio. So, Rich, we've come in fast to the end of the show. We've got a race this weekend. So it is race week. We are going to Saudi Arabia in Jeddah. So give me your predictions for the race. See if you can get another one right.
Well, I can't see anything other than a Red Bull 1-2, Max followed by Checo. It's that third place, and it's a toss-up for me between Fernando and Leclerc. And before the song, I was thinking I'd go with the same three, and I'd go with Fernando getting third. Actually, I've had a thought about it. No, I have had a think about it. I think Charles Leclerc will pop in third because that Jeddah circuit is quite lengthy in terms of its straights and whatnot.
Yeah.
And there's not really too many sharp low-speed corners and apexes that we know Fernando's good at. So I think it'll be Leclerc in third.
Nice. Okay, so I'm going to mix it up a bit here, and I am going to go Max for the win. Alonso second. So you think he's going to go one better than he did in Bahrain? And I think Leclerc third. I think something's going to happen to Perez, either some sort of failure or because of the straight line speed of the Ferraris and things, he's going to be used as some sort of blocker or something in qualifying.
Yeah, quite possibly.
Something's perhaps going to go wrong, but I'm going to throw it out there and see what happens.
And you know what? Jeddah's a quick circuit. It's got some walls in it. It's a bit of a dangerous one as well. So, you know. Anything could happen.
And a driver like Alonso, you know, he is a balls out driver, and if you put him in a fast car, I think he could do well at Jeddah, but we will see. Right, so that pretty much brings us to the end of the show. So anyone at home, if you'd like to tweet us, particularly with the little town of Bethlehem, Dutch national anthem.
Do you think my wife is mad for thinking they're similar? Have a little listen. Tell me your thoughts.
So you can tweet us on @lights_F1 on Twitter. You can listen to any songs on Spotify by searching for Danny Knight UK and then looking for LOL GF1 Jack's playlist. You can go to jacksradio.com, go to the listen again functions, listen to our show, listen to any other shows. They're quite old on there at the moment, but the newer ones have been put on SoundCloud, but they will be linking to the website soon, so you will find all the up-to-date ones there. Okay, so playing us out tonight is a band, The Imagine Dragons, with the song
Good name.
Demons.
Good name. The Imagine Dragons and Demons.
With their song Demons. So, Rich, do you want to say goodbye?
I will say goodbye, and we'll see you next week after Jeddah.
And it just remains for me to say goodbye and drive safely.